Golf Smarter Premium, number 513, published on November 3, 2015. Legal Mulligans, when it's okay to play two golf balls with Richard E. Todd, author of The Golf Rules.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Richard.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back, Fred.
I enjoy having you on because you're a fan. And you're a fan of the podcast. Maybe too much of a fan of the podcast. You know things about me that I didn't know I've even said. Is it because you've heard it on the podcast, or is it because because we've had this conversation?
Both of those. But yeah, the listening to the podcast for, I don't know, what, 5 years? More than that, right?
Yeah, well, it's been almost 10. Maybe. Yeah, 10 years on the podcast.
Then probably 7, yeah.
Wow.
Well, I've had the books out for 3 years, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, well, it's been a while. Yeah, wait a minute. It's been 3 years since you were last on the podcast?
No, last year. Last year? I think it was last year.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was too. Anyway, well, congratulations. You've got a new book out. two new books out, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you've got short stories. You want to hold them up? Yeah, why don't you hold them up?
Absolutely.
Short stories from the Long Links, Volume 1, just released. And that's available on Amazon?
It does, yes. Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, pretty much everywhere on the internet.
And it says Volume 1. What do you got in mind?
Well, actually, I've already started on Volume 2.
Really?
There's so many stories. A lot of these, the tales in here, come from daily experiences and a couple from jokes or comments that I've made on your previous podcasts or heard from some of the other ones you've done.
Oh, wow.
So, you're welcome. And just everyday life and some of the book signings I've done, everybody has a golf story, whether they're golfers or not.
It's true.
It's a little unnerving at times, but some are really funny and some need a little help. but you can take what they've said and twist it around and make it really funny. For example, just kind of jump ahead real quick. The last story in here, which was supposed to, well, it's going to be the first chapter in the Volume 2. So this is the bonus chapter. I was driving down the road and I glanced off to the road. I always do this. And I saw this area and I wasn't sure if it was a golf course or a cemetery. And so then my mind is like,
that's funny already.
Well, yeah. So my mind's like, well, what if it was both? Or what if they were neighbors, a cemetery, and that's where the grave hole came into being?
Okay. All right. So I'm curious, the people that tell you their stories, are they mostly embarrassing or are they bragging about something that, you know, they accomplished on the golf course?
Both. Okay. One person, I was doing this book signing and this 90-year-old gentleman shuffles up to me and I'm like, so you a golfer? He's like, oh no, I can't play anymore. He goes, but I used to caddy. And I'm like, oh yeah, tell me a story. And he's telling me, he goes, the year is 1957 and I'm carrying the bag for William Hopkins. And I'm
like,
well,
who's William Hopkins?
Well, that's what I said. He goes, well, Cleveland Airport's named after him. So I did some research and he was very instrumental in the rebirth of Cleveland, so to say.
That's a joke in itself. I'm not even going to go near the rebirth of Cleveland.
And so then he tells me, he finishes his round. He's real excited and he gets a 50-cent tip. I'm like, well, I don't know anything about the tipping finances of 1950. So was that good? He's like, oh, hell no. I was used to getting $2.
Bada boom.
So, yeah.
It's very sweet. That's a sweet
story. A little bit more. Yeah, that's some good stuff.
Yeah, well, my favorite story from a 90-year-old guy I was playing with, or probably in his late 80s, he said, son, when you get to my age, can I tell that on the podcast? Yeah, well. I'll bleep it out or I'll cut it out. Nah, never mind. I'll tell you off air. No, he says, when you get to my age, you pee as often as you have to and you never trust a fart. Okay, fine. So that was just part of the joke. There was more to it and I'm not going to go there. So anyway, so short stories from the Long Links.
Yes.
And it's a great book. It's a great gift book for your golf friends. It's also a great book to have in the bathroom because the stories are so short.
Yes.
Just a little bit at a time. So, you know,
absolutely
highly recommend that you look into that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, whatever. And then the other book that came out just at the same time, I guess, is a coloring book.
You know, adult coloring books big right now.
Yeah, an adult coloring book. It's not necessarily for kids. Why is that, and what's the difference?
Well, that's a new fad right now, or a big thing. The pictures are drawn with more precision. Okay. And, you know, it almost looks like a picture. It's not that really thick, fat drawings that a lot of kids have in the little kids' books. Actually, it's funny. I was at Barnes & Noble's this week, and they have an entire section dedicated to adult coloring books. Usually they're a little more geometric. But yeah, it's interesting. So actually, the story behind the golf coloring book was my family likes to give gifts right before we go on vacation. So I decided to make a beach coloring book from photos that I took on our vacations.
Oh, that's
so
great
I
idea.
Did that just for the idea of giving it to my family before we left. Well, in the process of
creating
this.
Wait, you can do a coloring book one up at a time?
I mean, yes.
So and now you've just given me this amazing idea. So how do you
Well, we can talk about that later. I don't want to give away all my
your
secrets.
Trade secrets. Okay.
But in doing so, I had to list it out on Amazon. So I'm like, well, we'll leave it out, see what happens. By the end of the week, it had reached number one in Amazon new releases for travel and number two for Destination Myrtle Beach books.
So wait, this is your family coloring book?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called Myrtle Beach Coloring Book.
Oh, my God.
And it just was selling great. And so I'm on vacation, and I'm watching the numbers, and the sales ring up, and I'm like, I've got to do this for a golf course because all my books are in the golf. So the first thing I did when I got back is I ran to the local Muni and spent some time going around and looking at different angles and that. And that's what this is. And this has been my number one seller. I sell these daily, which is interesting. I mean, there's some nice pictures. And the other day I was coloring it and I'm like, oh yeah, this is relaxing.
I'm astonished because I'm thinking maybe you're focusing on the wrong content on your books. I mean, if that's your number one seller, do we really need to be doing all of this right now where people are like, yeah, I've read those stories.
Well,
I've read that.
Yeah. And that first one took me 3 years.
Of course.
The coloring book took me like a weekend.
Now what does that tell you? Okay, now we're in business mode here. It takes you minutes, and it's your bestseller. You're onto something, buddy.
Right?
But
right.
I love the idea. Okay, we're gonna definitely have to talk about this afterwards about making a coloring book. I have all these family photos. I want to like holiday gifts for all the adults, but it's like all these family photos that I can do. It's like such a great idea. Oh my gosh, I love that idea. Wow. All right. All right. So then the first book, Golf Rules, which I've yelled at you before because you gave a dedication to me on there. And it was like, that was totally unnecessary. And to the people who are watching us right now on Blab, thank you very much. And to let all Golf Smarter listeners know that if you want to participate in our conversations, upcoming interviews that I'm doing, you're more than welcome to do it. We do it live on Blab. It's on video. We have people there right now that can submit questions to Richard if they have, or they can even, when we're done with the interview, we'll open it up and let people come on video and ask you questions as well. So I want to thank the people that are here, names that I recognize from the Golf Smarter podcast. Thank you for joining us.
I recognized a couple names, too, that were signed up beforehand from the author circles.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it was interesting. I'm like, oh, hey, I know where they're.
I love that. I love that. All right, golf rules. Let's go over a couple rules. Let's go back to the rules because there's new rules coming to golf in 2016. I think it's really important that the golfers should hear about. But let's go to the other book, which is Golf Etiquette, right?
Right. Of course, the perfect follow-up to the rules.
Absolutely.
How to behave on the course.
Right. If you're going to break the rules anyway, you might as well be polite about it.
Exactly. Don't want to be a schmuck.
Hey, watch that. So, but the way you tell these, this is not just a rule book. It's not a list of rules. explain how you've incorporated your stories into the Golf Rules book.
Oh, absolutely. As you know, very few golfers own the little white book from the USGA.
Right.
And a small percentage of those that own it have read it, and even fewer understand it. And I can say that from having gone to USGA Rules School, which, for those that don't know, it's a four-day intense education.
Really?
We're starting at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we'll go 9 to 10 hours. And you come out of there, you eat dinner, you run back to your hotel room and start studying for the next day. It's worse than college.
Very interesting. It sounds like hell to me.
And then the last day is a four-hour exam, 100 questions. A lot of people do not finish it. That's how tough it is. Now, granted, the score on this exam dictates if you can officiate at any local, state, or national event.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you have to get a 99 or 100 to do a tour event.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting. And I remember, you know, at this point, I had spent about a year or two reading the rules. And I go to this rule school, and then all of a sudden, it was like the ball and a ball. I just thought it was legalese the way it was written. But they're two separate entities. The ball is the ball I'm playing.
Right.
A ball is every other ball. It could be a ball in my pocket, a ball you left from the last hole that you hit in the woods.
And there's specific rules about the ball and a ball.
Oh, absolutely. Because when you're playing, it's the ball.
Okay.
And everything else is a ball, kind of like an equipment. So it was amazing. It was eye opening. When you break it down that way.
No, I've never read a rule book, the golf rule book. I probably should have. but you know, and one of the friends that I play with regularly, he's our golf rules person.
Rule book?
Yeah, I didn't want to slander him right now, but he's the rules guy. And so we always refer to him. It's like, so what's the ruling on this? How do you want to do it? But if you're playing with me and he's not there, and someone says, is this legal? And he says, you know, I always say, yeah, it is now. I mean, it's, if you want to do it, go for it. I don't really care because we're not playing for money and we're not playing in a tournament. So just have fun. That's my primary goal every time out.
It's that first part. You know, it's not, you don't have to be playing for money, but, you know, if it's bragging rights or even a drink at the end of the term. You know, if you if it comes down to that one event at the end of the game,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be like, you know, maybe I should have won. You might harbor a little resentment. So it's nice to know the rules. And the USGA is really doing a lot over the past year and a half to make the rules easier to understand and more user friendly.
Really?
As you were saying, well, you started to talk about the 2016 rule changes.
Right.
Just like the Olympics, this happens every 4 years, where the USGA for America and the RNA for England and the other governing bodies, China, what would that be, Middle East and Canada, they get together, not just once a year, but throughout these 4 years.
Do you realize, you know how long it took me to figure out that RNA was not RNA, it's the word R and A.
Yes, royal and ancient.
Royal and ancient.
Which,
that's their governing body. Everywhere other than the United States, right? Pretty much.
And the interesting thing about that is no matter where you go, the rules are exactly the same. Whether the rule book says RNA on the front or USGA, the rules are exactly the same.
Okay.
They make sure that, you know, whether you're playing in Mexico or China, England, or San Francisco, that rule, you drop the ball exactly the same way.
Okay.
And so one of the new items is ball moved at address. A couple years ago, there was a lot of stink in the news about, I think it was Rory, but I can't remember. The ball's at address and not in the tee box, and the wind kind of moves it, or gravity moves it. Well, and before, there was a lot of discussion on if that was a penalty or not.
Mm-hmm.
The USGA has made it clear to say, did the golfer make it move? That's now how you define it. You don't have to worry about, is it clear that the wind or an outside agency moved it. You know, gravity doesn't partake. Did the golfer make the ball move? Yes or no? If yes, penalty. If no, no penalty. So there was a whole lot in the little rule book that just got slid away, mm-hmm. and they make this little change. So it's huge.
Yeah. And so now, but the change again is that it counts as a stroke? I got lost on it.
It's all right. If the golfer didn't make the ball move, so if it was moved because of wind or tremors or gravity, it's not a penalty.
Okay, but say now he's not addressed the ball, he's teed it up, and the ball
that's outside the tee box.
Oh, this is all outside the tee box. In the tee box, what's the rule?
You just re-tee it.
You can re-tee it, but there's no penalty.
Okay. Right.
But what? And now, if you swing, now I've had this happen. Like the ball
absolutely.
Would be
absolutely. We all
right.
have.
Right. So the ball would be either on a tee, you'll swing and miss, or even worse, like say the ball is embedded on the edge of a bunker, right? You're now on the face of a bunker here, and the ball kind of, what do we call that? Fried egg. It's embedded in the sand, and you take a big swing and the ball doesn't move and you don't even come near it. Does that count as a stroke?
It does. And even like you were mentioning in the tee box, we've seen where you may swing and whiff.
Sure.
That's a stroke that counts. The air quotes are intent. If you mm-hmm. intended on hitting the ball, it's a stroke. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, you don't get special preferential treatment because you're so bad you totally missed the ball. It's a stroke. It counts. It's not a penalty. It's just a stroke.
And yeah, again, I'm going to remind the people who are watching here live on Blab, if you have a question, type in /Q, and then type your question, and a little thing will pop up on the side of the screen that says question, and it will alert me to ask the question for you of Richard. If you have any ruling questions, rules, etiquette questions, please submit them. Let us know.
We'll see if we can answer them all.
We'll try. You know, last time I put you on the spot a couple times.
We were on the air for 3 hours, so at least before and after. So yeah, I was dead dog tired.
Yeah, I saw.
I
was asking you questions, and people were, and I got emails going, he was wrong about that. Right? See, he's wrong about that rule. So I'm trying not to corner you again. I don't want to do that to you. But let's talk about those new rules for 2016 that are coming. Let's make a long list of those.
Well, it's actually a short list. There's really only four big ones that everyone's talking about.
Okay.
So that's one, the ball moved at address. Scorecard. And again, this is something that you and I will never have to deal with. But remember, you know, imagine hoisting the claret jug. You just finished a beautiful round at St. Andrews. And some guy in
You want Phoenix, me to imagine that? You want me to fantasize about
that's
even,
nice.
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay.
Yeah. So some guy in Phoenix calls the USGA or the RNA maybe and says, hey, back on 8, his ball moved a fraction of an inch. And so
that happened.
Know, so I would say, yeah, it's happened a lot. So in the middle of, you know, your due, they come up and say, tap you gently on the shoulder and say, I'm sorry, we need to disqualify you. So the rule's been changed because in that situation, you turned in a card that was incorrect.
Okay.
And the infraction for that is disqualification. So now it's they've again, the USGA's looked at what's happened and try to make it equitable, which is all they do for every rule. They just try to make the game equitable, regardless of who's playing your level or where you're playing. Mm-hmm. So now you can't be disqualified for a penalty you didn't know you had. There is a penalty of 2 strokes for that, and you must correct your card, but at least you're not totally thrown out.
Okay, so it's a 2-stroke penalty, but this is tournament play only, right?
There are very few
Or is this TV tournament play only?
Well, it's
like somebody calls tattletales on you. It's like, hey.
Yeah, I, I'm sure, you know, at any tournament, it could happen. You know, the guy that's following you, and, following your group. And at the end, he goes over and, you know, whispers to the referee because he wants to seem intelligent.
I think we need to have penalty strokes for those people so that the next time, right, the next time that they play golf, they've already got like five. They're before they tee off the first time, they're already at a five, right? It's like add a hole to them. Just give them one par, right?
Yeah. Those are the people that probably don't care.
Yeah, that's true, too.
One mulligan per hole.
Ooh.
Did you hear that one? That's, yeah, it's one per, yeah.
One mulligan
not,
per hole.
Not,
wait, what?
Not the way I play.
Yeah, right. No, that's not a penalty. That's a gift. Isn't it? If you get one mulligan a hole, that's a gift.
Yeah, well, that's a practice round is what it is.
So, okay, be that way.
That one and the other two, artificial devices.
Oh, that's got to be huge because there's an app for that, right?
Well, there's lots of apps and there's lots of toys, and that's the problem. You know,
and I'm a sucker for these toys, too.
Right. And the local rule generally says you can use a distance measuring device.
Okay.
But you can't measure slope, wind velocity, temperature, I suppose, can make a difference. Which, if you've played in the south versus the north, you know that you need an extra club or
sure.
subtract a club. But anyhow, so one of the caveats of the rule was if your device measured more than just the distance, you could be in trouble. So now it's if you use it and you're told there's a penalty, believe that's two strokes also. Yes, two strokes. If you use it a second time after you've been warned, then you're disqualified. So okay. We've got a warning now, which is kind of nice.
That's the new rule is they've yes. included a warning on devices.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
tournament play, watching television tournament play, they've got caddies. They, you know, and the caddies have notes okay. for everything.
Well, artificial devices can also include.
Yeah, what like falls into the category of artificial devices?
Those, what do they call them? The orange whips, you know, the practice training clubs.
Yeah.
Or I saw one time, I can't remember the golfer, but he had the little rubber ball taped to his chest, you know, to making sure he kept his arms tight at swinging. Well, he kind of forgot that, or maybe you've got some kind of arm pad as a training aid. And if you forget to take that off from the practice range to the first tee, there you go. You could have been disqualified.
Now you're going to be warned.
It's an artificial device. Right.
So wait, no training aids allowed in your bag or allowed exposed in your bag? Are training clubs? So many different types of clubs out there.
Right, right. I can't remember if I think it has to be used, but there you go.
Okay.
You know, the little questions are coming in saying he's wrong. I don't have them, so I try not to.
What, you don't have artificial devices?
Training aids, yeah.
Yeah, no, but is there a list of what qualifies as artificial?
Oh, I'm sure. I would imagine it's anything other than the clubs. I vaguely remember somebody in maybe it was the LPGA, they had a swing weight. You know, like the old baseball donuts on their club.
Sure.
And they got in trouble for that. So, yeah, matter of fact, that was in between holes or while they were waiting. They were just practicing. They threw it on there. And that was an infringement. So when you're playing, play.
Wow.
If you're concerned about the score.
No, you can't even walk off the tee and while someone else is and just take a practice swing with your weight or anything. That's all illegal. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Are there rules about how many balls you can have? Not in play, obviously, but if you start playing, yeah, can you play with two balls simultaneously?
Oh, absolutely.
What?
Okay.
Wait,
you
want
me to answer that one? You want to come back to no?
Yeah, no. Answer me. What are you talking about? Absolutely.
Okay. There's several situations, but the first one that comes to my mind is you are playing with somebody else, and let's say you're in a sand trap and your ball is really scuffed up. Maybe it's not cut in half, or maybe it's got a little smiley face.
Okay.
And you say to your playing partner, this ball can't be played. It needs to be replaced. Your playing partner says
the ball is unplayable, right? As opposed to the lie.
Well, yeah, not no, not the lie, the physical ball itself.
Sure.
It has been damaged.
The ball.
Beyond, yes, the ball. Ball. There, you're catching on. Look at that. Okay, so your ball, the ball, it, you claim it's not fit for play.
Okay.
And your playing partner says, no, it is fit for play. Well, so now you've got a stalemate. You've got, you know, what are your choices? You know, you can go with his ruling and possibly be wrong. You can go with yours and possibly be wrong. But the USGA says you can play the ball as it lies, the broken ball, and then replace it with another ball and play that one. You actually hole out both balls and you write down both scores until you are able to verify the correct ruling, which generally 19th hole inside the pro shop, and then you go back to whichever score correlated with the correct ruling.
Okay, this makes no sense to me at all. I hate to make you start from scratch. This makes no sense. So now you are allowed to drop a second ball and play that ball if your partner, your playing partner, you say, all right, my ball, the ball's all scuffed up and it's not rolling properly, it's not flying properly because there's this big gash in it, it's got tree marks all over it. So I don't want to play with this ball anymore. And and this is where you're losing me. So now he's saying,
well, you want to change the ball.
Right.
And your playing partner says that's illegal.
Okay.
So you disagree on the rule, whether you can replace it or not.
Okay.
So what you do is you play your broken ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play another ball.
Simultaneously. I mean, you hit a ball and then you hit another ball.
Exactly. And then you get them on the green. You know, that might even be your second stroke on a par five. Play them both, hole both of them out. And then at the end of the round, you find out what was the correct ruling and play the ball that matches.
What do you mean, what was the correct ruling? I don't understand.
On whether you could change a ball in your situation.
It goes from course to course on whether they allow it or not? Or isn't this, aren't we talking about the rule book?
We are talking about the rule book. Okay.
Why am I so lost here?
We're going to have to edit this way back.
No. Okay. People are going, keep going, Fred. I don't get it either.
I think where we're losing each other is replacing the ball.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're on the 15th hole. Okay? I've been playing with the same ball. I haven't lost it yet. Playing with the same ball.
Lucky you.
I know, exactly. And now we're saying that the ball, I don't want to play with this ball anymore because it's damaged. And I tell my playing partner, look, this ball is all messed up. I'm going to use a different ball.
And he says it's not messed up.
It's not messed up. Okay. So I'm saying, well, then, but I don't want to play with this ball. But he says, no, you have to. That's the ball you're playing with. Right?
Right. But you're saying the rules say I can switch this ball because the ball is unfit for play.
Okay.
Now, there's definitions on what dictates unfit for play. Mm-hmm. Scratches, grass, dirt, as you were just mentioning, that does not make a ball unfit. Now, if you cut the top off, you got a big old smiley face, it's unfit for play and can be changed in the middle of a hole. So there's where the fork in the road is at.
Mm-hmm.
You want to switch it. He says no. Let's say it's just scuffed and it's not. Because you guys are.
So now when we get. So we've played these last three holes and I'm playing with two balls the entire time.
No. Just that hole.
Oh, just that hole. Okay. All right. But say the scuffed up ball that I want to get rid of, I double bogeyed because it wasn't rolling straight because it was all messed up. But the clean ball that I pulled out of my pocket, I got a par on that. I want to keep the par. And the playing partner.
Well, it doesn't matter what you want.
Right. Of course.
It goes back to the rules. And the rule says you did not have the right to change out your ball in the middle of a hole.
Is that a new rule?
No.
That's an old rule.
It's just something that you. Yeah, it's an old rule, but you mentioned it. So that's.
So, but no,
you
I
brought this up,
say,
not me.
I know. No. So I was saying, so I'm playing with, I have a ball. I'm playing with one ball and I have another one in my pocket because I'm expecting to lose it at any moment. So I always play with the second ball in my pocket. And you've probably heard many golf instructors on Golf Smarter podcast saying, no, never put a second ball in your pocket. Then you're just setting yourself
mentally,
you're setting yourself up for failure. So just use one ball all the time. Yeah, I don't want to.
I do it.
I do too. I don't know why. It just makes me feel comfortable that I got a second ball in my pocket.
Yeah, saves you a trip back to the cart.
Right. Okay, so now, but can I... Can I, not in tournament play, I guess this is all about tournament play, I can use either ball that I want that I carry in my pocket on any hole, or do I have to play the same ball with every single shot?
You can, whatever ball you start the hole with is the one you need to finish, unless the rules allow you to switch it because of it being unfit for play.
Okay, when you say unless the rules, aren't we, what, I mean...
That unfit for play. That's all we're saying. The only reason you can switch out that ball is if it's, well, if you lose it and you got to replace it, or if it's unfit for play, which is it's cracked or damaged so that it can't be hit. That's the only two that I can think of.
Okay. All right. So
that was long.
Whee! Different direction. All right. So now let's see. There are four new rules. So we talked about the ball moving at address, the scorecard. You're not disqualified now. Now it's just two strokes. And then artificial devices.
Right. And then, of course, the one that you've been talking about for years, anchor putting.
Oh, an anchor putting. Yeah. Well, this is the year it changes?
Yes.
The anchor putters. So now the rule is you can use a tall putter like that. It just cannot touch your body. What's the rule?
It cannot be directly or indirectly anchored, I think is the exact wording. And of course, what that means is, think about a normal putt. You know, your arms can kind of wibble wobble any which way they can, you know, if you're not holding things steady.
Hold that thought. Now, I'm going to get a putter. Hang on.
Okay.
I'll be back.
Here's the question. How long does it take him to find a putter? I can see one right now
here
in my office. Oh, hey, that was pretty good.
Oh, it's a small office. All right. So now, okay. So,
if you're holding it normally, you know, your arms do have some sway to them.
Right.
Okay. Let's pretend. Okay. Actually, you can even take that one because it's not necessarily about a long putter. Now take the butt end of your club and push it into your belt buckle.
Right. Or here.
Well, you got a short putter, so you're going to need to put it much lower.
No, we'll pretend. You can't tell.
Well, you can put it there.
Yeah, you
bend
can't
over
tell
like
how long.
We.
Okay. I beg your pardon? Bend over like what? Okay. So
Michelle
now.
Michelle
Wee. Oh, okay.
She's got that 90-degree angle when she putts.
Yeah. I tried to do that for a few weeks, and everyone's making fun of me, so I stopped doing that. So it's like, I'm getting closer to the ball. All right, so now I have this extended putter, and people have been anchoring it here to their chest mostly, right?
So basically what you're doing by holding that to your chest is, you know, you've forced the swing so that you don't have as much chance for error, shall we say?
Okay.
That's all they're saying. You know, the old rule that, you know, we've always had is, you know, swing normally. Swing without obstruction, and that's all you're doing with the long putters. You know, you could, it's not an equipment issue. So you could probably, you know, if let's say you had a long wedge, you know, you could claim the same thing.
That's contradiction in terms, isn't it? Long wedge, wedge or short?
Yeah, right. Well, maybe you're a short person, but basically, that's all they're saying is your club must swing freely.
Okay.
That's the layman way of putting it.
Okay. So now that's why with your hands, whether you're left hand low or your right hand low or side
claw,
by side.
Pencil, claw, pencil, whatever.
Pencil,
doesn't matter.
But I've seen now with a long putter, is this, if you put the putter and you're gripping it, I'm going to try to get this on video here. That's why I'm off microphone. I apologize to the podcast listeners.
Right.
But so now... I've got the grip up against my arm, and I'm holding on
forearm.
My forearm is that legal?
It is. And
the forearm. So anchoring it against your forearm and gripping like that—that's legal,
right? Well, and Yes, as long as it's below the elbow, because you still have that that issue, I think, you know, with the your swing with the elbow possibly.
Wow, I can do that. I can grip the club with in my hand, yes, well, and then wrap my hand around my forearm, yeah, you can, with the club.
You can take your non-dominant hand and push the club against your forearm, as long as it doesn't go above the elbow.
As long as the grip doesn't go above the elbow.
Right.
Wow.
The butt end. There's some great pictures and videos on the USGA website on this ruling.
Really?
So, it's not an equipment issue. You know, as we just showed, even with the short putter, you can anchor it or grip it illegally. Mm-hmm. It's just trying to make everything equitable. Hate to come back to that, but...
But you did.
I did, and that's
well. That's very interesting. I had no idea. So this is the year. So
January 1st,
2016 yeah. is when that rule goes into effect. I wonder what that's going to do. We'll probably see next spring. We'll see a lot of new putters, and we'll see a lot less long putters. I think manufacturers.
I don't know.
I think people are still going to play with them because they're so comfortable. It's just going to be interesting to see what guys. Isn't it Adam Rose on the tour that?
Adam Scott.
Adam Scott. Yeah, Justin right. Rose. Adam Scott.
Yeah.
So Adam Scott has been using the long anchored putter forever, right? And so, but they had to change a couple years ago on the tour, didn't they? Or was that the wedge?
No,
thing? That was the wedge thing. That was the grooves on the wedge. Totally different conversation. Sorry about that.
The old eye? The ping eye?
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyhow.
Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. So, again, let everyone know here, Richard E. Todd, T-O-D-D. You can find his books on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. You've got The Golf Rules Etiquette and showing them off to the folks who are watching on video. There you go.
Great.
And then we also have The Golf Rules Stroke Play. Now, is there a book coming out about match play?
Absolutely.
When is that happening?
I don't know.
Okay. What is it? You have a job? What's the matter with you? You work?
that and I've had it outlined for a while. But, you know, these other projects keep jumping up in the way.
Forget them all. Just do coloring books. The coloring book is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah,
all right. And then short stories, the brand new one, short stories from the Long Links, Volume 1, a collection of golf-related tales. And please, great, great gifts this holiday. You can get them, have them delivered to your house. Easy squeezy. Awesome.
And if you're interested
in
the golf and the short stories, but you're just not ready to pull the trigger, if you go to thegolfrules.com, you can sign up to have the first 5 chapters emailed to you.
Oh,
so
that's the sample.
That's a little tweezer. It's
okay.
Fun.
So it's thegolfrules.com. thegolfrules.com.
Yes.
And your Twitter handle and your blab handle here is TGR. Golf Rules.
Right. TGR, The Golf Rules.
Yep.
Golf Rules.
The Golf Rules,
Golf Rules was already taken. Yeah, it was already taken.
So you're at TGR Golf Rules. Redundant.
Exactly. And as you were saying, if as far as Christmas gifts, you also have the Complete Golf Course Journal.
Talk about that for a minute. Let's explain what the journal is, because it's a really,
sure.
Actually, if you want to if a golfer wants to analyze how they're doing, don't just look at your scorecard. It doesn't tell you enough unless you keep detailed notes on your scorecard.
And don't buy this one.
And don't buy which one? Don't buy this journal?
This journal is not that overly technical aspect, the one where that you mark down every single club you play and every stroke you play. This is the golf smarter type golf journal. You can, of course,
log your... What is that supposed to mean? What is the golf smart? It's for the half-ass golfers out there.
No, not at all.
What does that mean? Gotcha.
Rather than get buried and those stats that can really just get in your way of enjoying your round.
Yes.
And you know, granted, you there are opportunities, you know, where you can learn to improve your game by stats. But this is more based on the enjoyment of the round. There is,
this
of course,
is a scrapbook.
An area for your score. That's not a way of putting it.
Yeah, this is just
rather
like,
than, yeah. It, you know, you log, you know, where you played, the course conditions, you know, who you played with. You know, especially if you're traveling, you know, there's restaurants,
it's good,
hotels.
It's good calling that.
Rate the pro shop, you know, rate the lodging so that, you know, if you come back, you know, special notes of interest, places to visit, you know, first Eagle location, you know, so you can keep track of your.
That's
your
a good way to do it.
That's listed
you know,
on
it's
there.
So funny because every year I take a golf trip in the spring with three buddies.
Yeah.
And I've talked about that. And I could not tell you what golf courses we play. And yet, one of my playing partners 8 years down the road will go, oh, right, we played this, this, and this. I'm like, how would you? I don't even remember where we ate, what city we were
right.
in.
Right. And a lot of people, you know, they like to say the scorecards. And they get kind of messy, all piled up. And so
now you have a spiral bound book, a journal.
Right.
That's
because the scorecard has, you know, your scores, mm-hmm. who you played with, and mm-hmm. rate and slope, and that's it. So throw that in here. Now you've got a little extra information. So you've got your scores as well as all that personal information to keep your memories alive.
I like it. I like it. Good. So to wrap this up, and thank you so much for your time today. To wrap this up, how about a something that people need to know about either a rule or etiquette that they keep screwing up?
My favorite one is, you know, mulligan. There is no such thing as a mulligan. Just play every stroke. And don't use a foot wedge. You know, going off all that stuff. When you kick your ball out of high brush, all you're doing is taking away the opportunity to hit a great shot from a bad lie and really feel good about yourself. Anybody can hit from the fairway. It's that extra up and down from the woods that really make you feel good. You're shaking your head. Come on.
The opportunity to feel good as opposed to feeling good.
Okay. I'll give you that. It's kind of like, I think you mentioned it before. I don't care if I've got a 1-inch putt or a 5-foot putt. I want to hear that ball rattle around in the cup.
Got to hear
don't
the happy
take
sound.
Take that away from me.
Got to hear
don't
the happy
sound.
Don't
take that away
sound.
From me.
Yeah. Great. All right, Richard. Great talking to you again. I'm going to call you right back on your phone because I want to know more about the coloring book.
Okay. Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me back on.